Welcome to the podcast. I'm John Tesh with Gib Gerard, and coming up today, how blowing up three balloons can extend your life.
We'll see how that plays out.
Why people are revolting against the self-checkouts in the stores, including this guy.
Hate him.
Plus the latest stats on men and women and their pets, and why the latest way to get fit and have fun at the same time, and this has been studied, is something called clown cardio.
I have never been more intrigued and more skeptical of a tease than all of these things you've just mentioned.
But first, let's talk about roundness. If you find yourself less stressed and maybe even more creative when you're in a round room, anything from a gazebo in the park to a circular tent on a camping trip to the rotundas found in many churches and public buildings. New research from Bond University in Australia shows that round rooms have a more positive influence on our psychological well-being than rectangular or square rooms. And in an experiment where people were asked to perform creative tasks in a variety of different shaped rooms, those in round rooms often produce the most creative results. And this comes from cognitive neuroscientist Dr. Oliver Baumann. Says there's a simple fact that you can't be backed into a corner in a round room on a primal level.
Okay, so good for Dr. Baumann for figuring out the corner thing. And also, the data is there. They did the study. Round rooms, you come up with more creative responses.
Right.
But also, every round room that you mentioned is a room that's someplace interesting, right? It's like nobody, it's like, oh, very few people. And if they have a round room in their house, it's usually because their house is architecturally interesting.
Right.
So they're already a more creative, you know, eccentric person.
Mm-hmm.
So my issue is that every place you just mentioned is a place of excitement and relaxation at the same time, right? Camping, right? You're on vacation,
right? Okay.
You're going to a church or a government building that has some sort of grandness to it. Gazebos, those ballrooms at the Del Coronado in San Diego. All of these are nice places.
Roundabout.
I don't know. But is this a Yes song?
Okay.
My point is that these are all places that are already interesting,
right,
that are already going to stimulate the kind of you know, mental growth.
Okay,
but I don't have you don't have a round room in your house. You have a very nice house, architecturally interesting, no round rooms.
I have performed on a couple of round stages, one on Long Island in Westbury Music Fair and a theater, but it moved around in a circle. It was on a turntable, which was no fun. I was not relaxed. Nothing was stressed because I couldn't figure out.
It's disorienting.
But before you finish poking holes in this whole thing, in Dr. Oliver Baumann's thing, on a primal level, he says, there's evidence that rounder environments remind us of being in our mother's womb.
Does that sound relaxing to me?
You can't breathe.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Well, but also Knights of the Round Table.
Sure,
that wasn't a relaxing place.
But that was about you know, authority. It was not about creativity. I don't think that Lancelot was working on his paint by numbers on the side.
All right. Well, anyway, find a round room if you can't. You know, go to Washington. Okay. Yeah.
Is my point.
Or just spend time with your family around a round table.
Because, go to a gazebo.
Yeah,
find one.
All right, here's our next tip, which is from cognitive psychologist Dr. Nick Reed. He says we should be careful while listening to a sports broadcast.
Guilty.
People who listen to sporting events while driving are as dangerous on the road as drunk drivers, he says. The researchers found that when people became absorbed in the action of a game, they lost focus on the road and their reaction times slowed dramatically. Almost the same amount of slowing caused by drinking alcohol before they got behind the wheel.
I think that depends on what kind of sporting event you're listening to. I am very notoriously around here. I'm a baseball fan.
Right.
And baseball has a certain rhythm to it that's a little bit softer, a little bit slower, a little bit easier to consume while you're driving or while you're, you know, while you're doing other things.
Well,
if I was listening to like playoff hockey... Yes, absolutely. That would be distracting. The action is fast, right, and I'll say too. I definitely am the kind of person where if I'm listening to an exciting baseball game and it gets very exciting, I will turn it down when I'm going to park or find an address or I have to do make a left turn or something like that.
Right.
So I definitely am aware that I can be distracted, but the kind of sporting event that I listen to is a little bit more even keel, a little bit more background noise, which
listen,
I like about it.
Listen, we've been on stage before performing concerts when the Dodgers were in the playoffs.
Yes.
And you play a song and then run off the stage.
Yes.
I mean, you're really invested in this. So
playoff baseball, I will give it to you.
Okay,
but like, you know, some random night in July.
Yeah, but remember, the psychologist, Dr. Reed, says that when you're listening to a sporting event and that you're driving drunk So just to bottom line this, so it's like you're saying, like it's hockey or the NBA, but not ski jumping.
Oh, ski jump! I mean, if you're into ski jumping, first of all, I don't know how you listen to ski jumping and you're not drunk. That doesn't make sense to me. Because it's just, oh, here comes Bill. He's jumping. He's in the air, right. And here's the number.
By the way, his name is never Bill.
No, it's
Hans.
Yeah, but here comes Hans. Bill fell. Bill broke his leg, but Hans is going to do a great job.
Yeah, by the way, Jim McKay never sounded like that. Bill's doing
Bill.
Great. He broke his leg. Next.
No. Well, with video, it's exciting. What do you say if you're doing, what is the radio broadcast for a ski jump going to be like? Here he goes.
Well, it's like Edward R. Murrow doing World War One or Two, whatever it was. It's all the humanity. You know?
Yeah, it's because the most exciting. We were way off the rails on the ski jumping thing.
Sorry.
But the most exciting thing about ski jumping is the risk of falling and the amount of time that they're in the air.
Right.
That's called dead air on the radio.
Yeah, sports broadcasts, getting into it too much in the car, be very, very careful.
And if you're listening to ski jumping on the radio, yeah. I kind of want to hear from you.
I don't think it's on the radio.
I don't think so either.
But you might be able to. I have a tape. I have a tape you can have. Let's talk about lung function.
Of course.
Because there's a new way now that you can actually improve your lung function. It's from the Journal of Physical Therapy Science. It's this simple. You can improve your lung function in 2 weeks. And if you ever follow Dr. Peter Attia and his book Outlive, you know that VO2 max, the ability of...
Right over there. Right. It's your ability of your lungs to process oxygen
and how much
oxygen you can take in when your heart rate is up.
That can determine longevity. So what they say is if you want to improve your lung function in just 2 weeks, you blow up 3 balloons every day. This is, again, from the journal. They had people who took 15 minutes a day to blow up party balloons. So not like wet weather balloons,
but they
had significant improvements in lung function within 2 weeks. So it optimizes oxygen delivery from the lungs to your bloodstream, and the effort it takes to inflate a balloon increases lung capacity by strengthening your abs and diaphragm muscles, which you use to draw air into your... This is a white paper. So the advice is buy a bag of balloons.
Spend 15 minutes
a day blowing them up for better lung function in 2 weeks.
Go ahead. Buy yourself a bag of balloons and try this. Here's the thing. I understand that if you are in great shape, blowing up balloons is going to be easier.
Yep.
In fact, when my kids have a birthday party or something, I know if I'm blowing up the balloon, I can tell, oh man, I've really let myself go recently. I should probably go for a jog because the amount that I'm struggling to blow up the balloon is significant. But I cannot. I mean, what you're saying now is that
I'm not saying it.
We're going to get ahead of this trend where like party planners and fitness studios combine, and you come in and you pay a fee to inflate balloons as your workout, and then they take those balloons and they use them at parties.
I think that's
the business that's going to come out of this.
I think the whole thing is a moneymaker, if you ask me.
We're always looking for
the angle. The balloon workout. Yeah, I mean, it's all over YouTube.
We should come up with the balloon workout on YouTube.
No, that's not, but the blowing up the balloons for a longer life is.
So the research is the research.
Right.
We need to come up with variable resistance balloons.
Yep.
So you start off, maybe
that's
you're
a good
not in
idea.
Great shape.
Yeah.
You have like the easy to blow up balloon, and mm-hmm. then you work your way up to like the yoga ball style balloon where you really have to use a lot of diaphragm power. This could be the way that we do this.
Yeah, weather balloon.
A weather balloon.
Yeah.
I don't think there's just air in those.
Let's get into pet peeves here, and one of them for both of us, and apparently for a lot of people, is these self-checkout things. So according to the Journal of Business Research, they just finished this study, and they're saying if stores want to keep their customers happy and coming back, then what they need to do is cut back on the self-checkout lanes.
I agree. I hate them.
The study found that regular checkout, quote-unquote, the kind with an actual human cashier, makes customers more loyal to a store. When customers use a regular checkout lane, they feel like they're more valued by the store because cashiers handle the work of scanning and bagging. The study also found that regular checkouts also make customers feel that they're receiving an actual service.
Absolutely.
So the upshot is the customers feel taken care of.
Look... It drives me nuts. First of all, you're interacting with a human being. You're a part of a society.
Right.
It's great.
Right.
The only time, there are days when I don't want to talk to anybody. Yeah, on those days, I appreciate the self-checkout. But here's the thing. It's a job. You're giving me something to do to get myself. If I got like 2 items, fine, no big deal. But if I've got a whole cart, there's no way I'm going to do the self-checkout.
Yeah.
Unless you want to give me the employee discount. If you're going to give me the job of being the checkout person, then I should get the 40% off.
That's right.
That's the way I feel about it. Because the other thing is, it never works easily. It never works without one of the items that won't scan. So I always have to have a person come over and they have to press the button and reset the thing, and they always seem put out by the fact that they have to come help me do it. Fine, give me the old checkout lane. I would prefer that.
Yeah, yeah. I also think the voice that comes out of those things is a bit judgmental. I think they should
remove
really...
card now. Remove card now.
Yeah, yeah. I said put the bag in there. Yeah. I think if they went the whole Southwest Airlines thing, mm-hmm. and just be a little, you know, say, hey, what's going on?
Yeah, everything could be nicer about it. I always feel like our robot overlords are. They're testing the waters for how they're going to influence us in the future. This does not feel human.
All right. Well, anyway, let us know how you feel about the whole self-checkout thing, and we'll start.
I hate it.
Okay. We'll start a movement. You can just email us at john@tesh.com. And coming up, I can tell you that I didn't see this coming. Apparently, the latest way to get fit and have fun at the same time is clown cardio.
That's anytime I do cardio with your shoes on. Because you have big
but,
feet.
But yeah, I think people probably got that. But first, listen to this. You know, what I hear from many people who come up to me after my live concerts is, oh, John, I've always wanted to play the piano, but I don't have time for all those lessons. Or they say, I'm too old to start learning now. I can teach you how to play a song on the piano in just 3 days without spending 1 minute learning music theory or reading sheet music. We do this together by me teaching you how to play my most memorable songs. So go to Tesh.com right now and get on the waiting list for my brand new online course, The John Tesh Piano Method. It's Tesh.com. Tesh.com. Welcome back to the podcast. John Tesh with Gib Gerard. And in a moment, we're going to talk about clown cardio.
Why?
But first, we talk a lot about posture. I have a problem with posture.
I have a problem with posture.
I'm like this. So the experts say you do this next time you're down in the dumps. You adopt what's known as a joy posture. And Gib's going to demonstrate this. It's according to a study from Duke University.
You make me. Okay, let's do this.
What's the joy posture? It's a posture where your spine is straight.
Okay.
Your hands are raised up over your head, and your head is uplifted, looking towards the sky. And the study found that adopting this helps subjects experience more positive feelings compared to when they were looking down straight ahead or their hands were at their sides.
I feel like an idiot.
Well, yeah, but I mean, as with most things that are good for you, they seem idiotic at first. Yeah. But you can put them down now. Okay. But anyway, what do you think about this? Are you supposed to strike a pose where you just won $1 million and that joy posture is not only going to be, you know, better for your body, for your spine and everything, but it releases more feel-good dopamine.
I feel fantastic. Thank you so much for recommending this. First of all, standing up straight in general is just a good idea. So straighten your spine. I can't help it. Every time we do a story about posture, I have to sit up just a little bit straighter because it reminds me that I hunch. I feel fine, but this is one of those tips that we give out that you need to do in the privacy of your own home, your own, don't do this in an open workspace environment is my point. Like if you're on a factory floor, you're in an open concept, WeWork kind of place, don't do what we just described. Don't stand up and cause you look ridiculous. I feel ridiculous. I feel like I'm Superman trying to take off, but it's in Superman 2 when I've lost all my powers, so I can't actually take off. Remember that?
Yeah, I do.
Kneel before Zod. That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. That's how I feel.
I remember that. You know, when you're married for coming up on 32 years, Connie and I.
I thought you meant you and me.
Yeah, you're always looking out for each other. Yep. You know, like, hopefully. So my wife is always. You know, she's if my posture starts to go. She'll say, you know, she used to say, John, posture, like, which is embarrassing because people walking by say, oh, look at her, look what she's doing, uh-huh. This poor guy, you know. So she said, we need like a word. This is an amazing story. Maybe it's not an amazing story, but it's goofy. So she says, we need a word so that I can say
tippy toe.
Yeah, like that. Something like that, you know, like a safe word or something. So you'll know that just to straighten up, you know. Chest out, straighten up, you know.
Hey, John, teriyaki salmon.
No, it's very close to that, though. So she said, we experimented with different words. Oh, people are going to know what's going on. And so she said, I've got it. And I said, what is it? And she said, Ramaswamy. And I said, what? And she goes, Ramaswamy. When I say Ramaswamy, just, you know, you'll know to straighten up. And I said, you mean the guy that was running for president, Vivek Ramaswamy? And she goes, yeah, nobody will know what we're talking about because he's not running anymore. That's genius. So every now and then, if you see us out in concert or something like that, and you see me with my wife, if you hear Ramaswamy, then straighten up. I haven't talked to Vivek about this.
I hope he hears about this.
I think he would love it.
But that isn't it. That's, yeah.
That's it for posture. You got to do the joy, the pose.
Good. Yeah. And I, you don't pick your own word. Ramaswamy.
See how that works.
I don't want to be a part of this.
All right, let's talk about the latest stats on men and women and their pets, because this is important. Because you know, a lot of relationships break up because the guy doesn't want the pet on the bed. He doesn't want the chihuahua on his face. You know. Anyway, so this is from a poll. That's a good example.
Yeah, I don't think anybody wants a chihuahua on their face. Okay. By the way, nobody's like, "Hey, I love my dog so much. I hope it sleeps on my face."
It's happened to me years ago. This comes from a poll.
But you didn't like it, is my point. You didn't want it.
A poll comes conducted by Men's Health magazine. So they found a couple of things, and there's 1, 2, 3, 4 of them, and I'll get your opinion on this, given you folks at home. At some point or another, 21% of men have used their pet as a way to meet women.
I think 21% seems low, and it's not just men meeting women, because Prima has, she'll be mad, but Prima met a guy, his sister, my daughter, doing this exact thing by having Leroy, the dog, who's around here somewhere, she has started conversations with guys because they see the dog and they're like, oh, he's cute. It gives you like a safe topic of conversation to start a conversation. So it works for men and for women. I absolutely think 21% is too low.
Yeah. Also, women find men 24% more attractive if they're holding a puppy.
That's the puppy. That's not you. You don't get credit for that.
Okay. One in five men say if a woman kisses her pet on the mouth, it's a deal breaker. They won't date her.
So that's only 20%.
Those are guys that have a list, you know? 80%, like Scotty Myers has a list.
80% of the men are still fine with it. But I think it's important because it does show like a line in that you have. Like, okay, if you treat your dog like that, then that's not something that I'm interested in. And for a lot of people, we've talked about this before, how you treat your pets is a good barometer, a good litmus test for how your relationship is going to go. You know, or how compatible you are. So if you know that you're incompatible in this regard, then yeah, break up before the relationship even starts. I love it.
All right. And then again, this is a poll conducted by Men's Health magazine. The last one, the pet least likely to get a man a second date is a spider like a tarantula.
Yeah. I think it's...
What questions you have to ask to get to this?
Well, I wonder if they had like a list of pets you could choose from, and they got to tarantula, and all the women were like, "Oh yeah, tarantula for sure."
And half the guys say, "I've got one."
Or everybody they surveyed had a bad first date experience with a guy who owned a tarantula. It's one or the other. I feel like tarantula is more of a personality trait than it is a pet. Like if you're the kind of person that has a pet tarantula, you're a specific kind of person. I mean, this is a spider you have to feed mammals to. You have to give them little pinkies.
All the little rabbits?
Yeah, the baby mice. It's an insect or an arachnid that you have to feed. People are going to write us if I say insect because it's a spider. You have to feed mammals too. That's a very specific kind of person that's willing to do that for their insect. I'm just saying, and I say this as somebody who has a pet lizard. You've crossed a line when you're that kind of person. I think it's more personality type than it is the spider itself, personally.
Yeah. I mean,
would you own a tarantula? When you were single in New York, would you have a tarantula?
No, but I knew people who were like what you're talking about. I mean, back in the day, it was like, I have a tarantula and I have a tattoo. Now everybody has tattoos, so it's not a big deal. But I think the guy, if you remember this, I think the guy who has a tarantula is the same guy who has in his bedroom who has the clapper. You know?
Oh yeah.
Clap,
in a waterbed.
Lights on. In college I had the clapper and my roommate had a waterbed.
And your neighbor had a tarantula, and there you go. Yeah. We've come full circle.
The problem is that for me, I got it at Radio Shack. The clapper thing never worked. I go and it'd just be on, you know. Why are you clapping? What's going on with you?
You bring somebody back to your dorm room and you're trying to turn the lights off and she just thinks you have a
I never brought it back to anybody. So anyway, let's get serious. I mean, this is all serious stuff. I mean, the tarantula thing is incredibly serious. That could be horrible. But let's talk about brain health for a moment, because according to many doctors, they're now performing these things called, quote, well-brain checkups. And these things are proven to help you delay or even avoid brain diseases like Alzheimer's. So the way I understand it is that a well-brain checkup involves a blood test that measures levels of plaque, because we know about plaque. Plaque
right.
is it's a known biomarker for Alzheimer's, which can begin clumping together, and then you end up with cognitive decline.
Plaque, it's the same plaque that's on you, that causes cavities, that causes heart attacks, that causes Alzheimer's.
Yeah,
it's so that same buildup.
Right, so the earlier a doctor detects more plaque in the blood, the better your odds of preventing Alzheimer's. Also, these well-brain checkups, they're going to ask about your diet, because we know that foods, processed foods, saturated fat, sugar, contribute to inflammation in the brain. And you should expect also to get an eye exam. I just had one today when you're having your brain assessed, because even your eyesight, even if it's perfect, an exam can reveal if there's damage. I have some damage in my eyes because when I was younger, I had higher blood pressure. It's another sign of high blood pressure if you have tiny blood vessels in the retina that have been damaged, and that can affect your longevity.
So, I mean, we see everything you're describing is either chronic inflammation or high blood pressure,
right,
which are two
right.
things that are biomarkers for almost every chronic disease that we talk about on the radio show,
right.
everything that our researchers come to us with. Those are two of the big ones. It's why we recommend you have an at-home sphygmomanometer, blood pressure cuff.
Right.
It's why we recommend
yep.
that you regularly test your blood pressure and you deal with acute stress, not chronic stress. So that is, these are just more of the same things that we talk about all the time. And those are just the two big factors, the two canaries in the proverbial coal mine that let
right.
you know that your lifestyle is creating this kind of stress that is going to, in the long term, hurt you. So, you know, do yourself a favor, find out if you have this stuff, and then start making the choice, the lifestyle choices, to get over this before it begins to deteriorate your brain.
Yeah. And since we're on the topic, and we were talking about Peter Attia's book, Outlive,
Which is right over there. Yeah. I can almost reach it.
It is. It's he talks about zone two training for not only longevity, but also lowering your blood pressure. And why don't you describe zone two training? Because it's something I'm trying to do right now. It's not interval training, which is really hard on your body.
It's the kind of heart rate where you have a hard time having a full conversation, but you can still make words. The best way to get to this place, if you have like a heart rate monitor on your watch, and you calibrate it, it will tell you when you're in zone two. For me, it's about 140, 150 beats a minute.
Wow.
But if you get on a treadmill and you put it at like 10% incline at about 3 miles an hour, and you do that for 15, 20 minutes, that will get you into zone two, and you can stay there for as long as you want to. I mean, we recommend, I think, 20, 30 minutes a
right,
day?
Yeah, it works out to be 150 minutes per week.
Yeah.
And that's, you know, I love, and it's so easy to, you can track your heart rate if you're somebody who knows all of that stuff like you, but it's like if you can barely make, you said it,
yeah.
if you can barely make a conversation with
right.
somebody, you could do it, but you don't want to because it's too irritating, then you know you're in zone
right.
two. And really the best way to do it, I mean, he says, you know, if you can do it when you're walking, that's fine, but you have to walk really, really fast. So a little bit of incline, like you mentioned on the treadmill, or even the Stairmaster is the way to do it.
Yeah. Yeah. And keep that up. And that, by the way, that will reverse half of what we just talked about in terms of precursors to Alzheimer's and negative longevity.
Yeah, that's outcomes. Good stuff. Very valuable. I do remember, well, I don't know if it was happening when you were younger, but you're Gen X, right?
I'm right on the border of Gen X. They call us geriatric millennials.
Yeah, and I'm a baby boomer,
you're very much a baby boomer.
Implied geriatrics. Yeah. I am very much
elder millennial, geriatric millennial, that's what they call us.
It's so funny because we were watching the news the other day and somebody said, yeah, you're 40% of elderly people, you know, something, blah, 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 blah. And I go, wow, man, that's a bummer, the elderly people. And it kind of goes, you know, that's you, right? Technically,
you know,
that's you.
It's a wild thing that happened. So, like, the Super Bowl, the halftime show, you think, oh, when I was a kid, it was all these older artists that appealed to older people.
Yeah.
It's great to see that the halftime show is starting to appeal to a younger crowd. And then it dawns on me.
Yes, yeah,
No.
That's, yeah.
I'm the older crowd now.
Yeah. I mean, the reason I bring this up is that back in the day, if you were going to go through psychotherapy, right?
Mm-hmm.
And back in the day, there wasn't really any psychotherapy. It was just they sent you to a quote unquote mental institution. This happened to my sister, and she ended up, Mary Ellen, and she ended up, she's no longer with us, and she ended up having, what do you call
electroshock
it?
Electroshock therapy.
Electroshock therapy, yeah, which, you know, whacked out her her memory, and their therapy was like, oh, I'm like, oh, you're in therapy right now? What's wrong with you? But it turns out that now admitting you've gone to therapy is attracting more matches on these dating apps.
Of course.
We say of course, but okay, anyway, wait. So Eli Finkel is a psychology professor at Northwestern. And he says in the 1980s or 90s, it would be hard to imagine that saying, oh, I see my therapist regularly would increase your dating status. But now taking care of your mental health carries a lot of weight.
That's why.
Psychology professor Paul Eastwick says having done some work on your mental health gives daters a competitive advantage. And you knew this?
I 100%. So for one, you're talking about a change in stigma. So when you were growing up, it was only mental institutions only certain people were in, they called it analysis, right? And it was always made fun of in movies. It was a comedic trope.
Yep.
And then you have shows like The Sopranos and you have these other shows where the main character is in therapy with the stigma, trying to work out their issues, and we see it work in a positive way.
Right.
So those kinds of pop culture references work to begin to change the stigma to the point now where you can text text your therapist and just kind of check in with them, which is something that, you know, never, obviously if you were institutionalized, you couldn't text your therapist. So now it's a totally different thing. And what it says is, hey, I've dated other people. I have some patterns in my life that I've recognized, and I'm working to break those patterns. What could be more attractive than say, hey, I'm admitting that part of the reason why my past relationships haven't worked is because of me, then I'm going to work to fix that, whether it's the people that I select or because of my own behavior.
Yeah.
Boom.
Yeah.
What
yeah.
an attractive
yeah.
thing.
Yeah. Yeah. What you're talking about is self-awareness, right? Yeah.
Self-awareness and a growth mindset, the ability to change and adapt to issues that you've had in the past. I love it.
Yeah. Yeah. Again, when it comes to dating, according to Eli Finkel, a psychology professor at Northwestern, admitting you've gone to therapy is attracting more matches, and the dating apps are seeing this as well. Okay, we're going to close out with this, and I have a feeling that of all the stuff we've talked about today, and if we're, you know, if you want us to go in a certain direction, or whatever, you can just let us know in the comments. Wherever you're listening to or watching this podcast.
Unless you want us to have more self-checkout lanes, in which case, keep your opinion to yourself.
Yeah, but the whole idea behind what we're talking about is we're curators, right? And so we find stuff that's not only trending, but things where you can dig in. And it's good. We always make sure with our writers and researchers that it's good material. And you're not going to be hurting yourself, right? Or that it's actually supported, it's peer-reviewed and supported. And so our whole idea is to help you with the next, however old you are, we're always looking for that next more powerful chapter.
We want to give you that edge.
Yeah, exactly.
That edge.
Exactly.
If you're in preschool, we want you to be the best kid in preschool. If you're going to the Margaritaville retirement community, we want you to have the edge on how to race your golf cart properly.
Yeah. So here we go. Here's a piece on a new way to do cardio. And you know, when I first saw this, we're not doing this. But then I look it up and it's like it's real. It's very popular and it's called Clown Cardio, which is listed as the latest way to get fit and have fun at the same time. So it's a new form of exercise that combines elements of aerobic activity and dance and improv comedy.
Okay. Right.
Now that's new.
Yeah, great.
So a typical clown
cardio. Do you remember when they had improv traffic school? Now they've got
I know what it is, but I've not been there.
It was comedians would run traffic school.
I'm a good driver.
Yeah. Okay.
A typical clown cardio session. It involves chasing others around while honking a bicycle horn, playing a sped up version of musical chairs, or competing in a chaotic game of clown dodgeball, which involves throwing different sized balls all at the same time. Right, what's what a clown would do, right? So the dance elements of clown cardio incorporate warm up moves that circus clowns have used since the 1920s, and some sessions devote time for practicing classic clown facial expressions while you're exercising, including surprise, sadness, and bafflement. I'm not sure what that one would look like.
Yeah.
I've seen that emoji. So wait. According to a neuroscientist, who is this? Dr. Sophie Scott, movement that triggers laughter is proven to reduce stress and motivate you to keep going. So because clown cardio is fun, you'll keep doing it. So I'll tell you how you can find clown workouts after Gib takes care of this.
Look, so if this is the kind of thing that appeals to you, I always say the best workout is the one that you do consistently. So if this makes you work out, then by all means, go do it.
Sound like but my
would,
therapist.
Would
now.
You do this? Would you? Because you and
I would cover it. I would cover it. I would report on it.
You'd be an undercover reporter.
I would get it. Back in the day, well, Eyewitness News and Action News.
You would have dressed up like the clown.
Yeah, you have to do it, right? You have to show people what it is. And I would have the bafflement smile and everything.
You and I like the same kind of weird movies, and they almost always the clown is the villain.
Yeah.
So there is an element of this where there's like fear.
Stephen King.
Right. I'm thinking of it. Right? Yeah. It, and then, you know, Killer Clowns from Outer Space.
The Joker?
Yeah, all of that. It's, all of that is terrifying. I don't know that I would be in the kind of... The benefit to me would be I'd be so scared of the clowns that I would work out just a little bit harder.
Yeah.
But it would not be an enjoyable experience. I still would rather... I'd rather do hot yoga than the clown workout, wouldn't you?
Well, you know they're going to combine it eventually because they combine all these workouts. Yeah. You know, so yoga was just yoga until it was like, oh, let's do it. We just do an asana. So there's going to be hot clown workouts. Wow, there's hot clowns in there. Awesome.
I have this image of like very in shape clowns that are very attractive. Like it's the hot clown workout. Yeah. You know, and coming to these like boutique fitness studios across the city.
Listen, I've got size 16 shoes. I can tell you that's a workout. Just lifting those up and putting them down. So I totally get it.
It's ridiculous. Look, if you want to try it, it seems fun. Go for it.
Okay.
But it also sounds ridiculous. Yeah.
Thanks for wrapping this up because that could have gone on forever.
I have a lot of images in my head.
Oh, but I do have it. Let me see what I got. You can find dozens of clown. I don't leave these people hanging.
Oh, yeah.
If you can find dozens of clown workout videos on YouTube or Google clown cardio in your neighborhood. So clown cardio plus your zip code.
What you would have done if we hadn't said anything to find out about it is what you should Google it. Google the clown workout.
Yeah, but just be careful because that's going to be in your history now.
Yeah.
you're gonna get served all kinds of ads about clowns.
Every website. Have you thought about visiting a clown today?
You might also like the clown tarantula.
Yeah, there you go. Whatever. Oh, gosh.
Hey, thank you so much for joining us. We had a great time. We hope you did too. And you know, we've restarted the podcast, the two of us together here, and we would love for you to help us grow it. So comment, what do you do? Comment, subscribe.
Rate, comment, subscribe.
Rate, comment,
reach
subscribe.
Reach out to us on social media. Let us know what you think.
All of that stuff. Yeah. Come see us live in concert. Go to tesh.com and you'll find all kinds of cool stuff.
If you've done the clown workout, you can go ahead and direct message me about it.
Thank you for listening. You know, what I hear from many people who come up to me after my live concerts is, oh, John, I've always wanted to play the piano, but I don't have time for all those lessons. Or they say, I'm too old to start learning now. I can teach you how to play a song on the piano in just 3 days without spending 1 minute learning music theory or reading sheet music. We do this together by me teaching you how to play my most memorable songs. So go to Tesh.com right now and get on the waiting list for my brand new online course, The John Tesh Piano Method. It's Tesh.com. Tesh.com.